Folks, welcome to the Long-Term Recovery Committee, and we have a couple of presentations today. Were there any announcements before we get started? Anything people wanted to share? Okay. I think we wanted to turn directly to Matt Morgan, is that where we are, to talk about the outreach to homeless populations and COVID vaccinations and other related aspects, and look forward to hearing from you, Matt.
All right. Well, thanks. I'm Matt Morgan, Executive Director of Journey Home, and Journey Home helps to coordinate the homeless response system in the Capital Region. So one of the things that we were able to do with the homeless population around vaccinations was we did get priority access based on the prioritization and the different waves for congregate settings. So people in congregate settings were, you know, more vulnerable to outbreaks. So we were able to start doing vaccination clinics back in January.
Wow.
And working with Hartford Healthcare, Charter Oak Health Center, Trinity Health, CHC, and the City of Hartford Health Department. They were all working with different shelters to vaccinate, to provide vaccination clinics, either on site or inviting them to come in and get the vaccines before, you know, the regular general population was able to get access to it. So that was good. By the end of March, I think the very last day of March, every one of the shelters had access to get to for the clients to be able to receive the vaccine if they wanted to. Which was great, really great. However, I will say the initial response from the clients experiencing homelessness was very low. In fact, in some shelters said zero people opted in to get the vaccine when it became available to them. Others had a better percentage. And then I would say some of the shelters in the suburbs had a lower percentage of people who were opting in than in like the City of Hartford. There was a higher percentage of some of those shelters who were opting in, of the clients who were opting in to accept the vaccine. So initially, I would say our opt-in rate was probably around 25 or 30% on average. But then we developed all these different strategies. The shelters worked on several different things to try to increase the rates within the shelter population. So we did also, in addition to the shelters, we set up clinics with the soup kitchens so that people who were unsheltered would be able to get access to the vaccinations as well. So one of the things we did was we contracted with Greater Hartford Harm Reduction to hire a vaccine peer educator. So a peer meaning someone with lived experience of homelessness and who has received the vaccine themselves, to be able to connect with people in the community, share their experience, educate people, dispel myths. And they've actually been working on a mobile van that Greater Hartford Harm Reduction uses to go out throughout the community. And they're also providing on the spot vaccinations for people who opt in. So that's been helpful for the unsheltered population, particularly. Some shelters have used the footwear with care, which is basically you get a free pair of shoes if you get the vaccine, as just an incentive to provide to some clients. Others are providing, you know, transportation, immediate transportation, like on the spot. If anybody says yes, then they're taking them. And then the other thing that's been happening is we did those initial clinics back in the first quarter of the year, but many of the health providers have continued to go back and provide either second doses. And then whenever they go and do the second doses, the more people opt in at that point after they've seen other people do it and you know, not having, you know, serious reactions or anything. And so we have been able to just increase the rates by continuing to provide those clinics at the different shelter sites. Another thing we did was that was raised was many of the clients were asking the staff about medical questions about the vaccine and the staff were not really prepared to answer those questions. So we brought in the State Department of Public Health was promoting this trusted messenger forum, partnering with an external organization that that basically did a huge forum for a whole bunch of the like frontline staff that work at all of our provider agencies in the homeless service sector, so that the staff could learn more about the vaccine and be able to respond better to some of the medical questions. And again, to dispel some of the myths, even among the staff from the provider partners. And then the latest thing that we have been doing is, Journey Home, we are monitoring the data for the everybody who's experiencing homelessness in the region. It goes into a central database system. And we basically are monitoring all the new people coming in and looking at their history of homelessness, and their eligibility for housing and all kinds of things. So we developed a partnership with Charter Oak Health Center and are sending the list every week to the our contact at Charter Oak Health Center for the new people who are coming into shelter. And then Charter Oak Health Center reaches out to the clients to contact them and ask them if they are interested in getting the vaccine. And if so, they'll set up an appointment right then and schedule it for them to come in. So everybody who's new is coming in, but there's still a challenge because, you know, the shelter population is always changing. So, you know, we do these clinics, we get people who are experiencing homelessness vaccinated, and then some people leave, and then we need to do a new clinic. So it's a constant rotating process, but I'd say we're probably up to around 65% on average across all the different shelters now that have been vaccinated. But again, it's like, it's almost an ongoing kind of process that we have to keep working on. So, but it's going well. And like I said, it's slowly been increasing as we've moved along and hopefully we'll see that continue in the future. Any questions?
Are the resources you need for this vaccination stable? You're not facing a cliff where you're losing your various resources to make this continue to happen? Since, as you say, it's a kind of a revolving door.
Yeah. So we've expanded a whole bunch of programming for the homeless services system that with CARES Act dollars, and that will sunset in September of next year. So we still have a few more months working on it, and we'll be able to continue a lot of what we've been able to do up until then. And then, yes, there will be a cliff unless the state kicks in with ARPA funds or other general funds to help continue some of the work, the progress that we've been able to make. Mm-hmm. It looks like Angela has a hand raised.
Yep. I can't see everybody on the screen. Did someone else have a question? I don't see. You see Colleen?
Angela has a hand raised. Go
it's
ahead.
It's not on my screen here, so okay. Please.
Yeah. Just yesterday, I asked the question if healthcare providers could proactively reach out to clients and their own clients to proactively inquire if they were interested in the vaccine. Whether they've had it or not had it, since they are, registered as clients. And I was told there may be some concern regarding HIPAA. The vaccine is part of the medical health record. So those folks that do use electronic reporting systems could potentially see whether the person has been vaccinated. But in an effort not to, to be in compliance with HIPAA, I was told that, that might be something that some folks aren't comfortable with. My question to you, folks are registered with, the CAN and entering the shelters, is your agreement with Charter Oak, does that allow you the ability to reach out proactively to folks that
yes.
may have the vaccine?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. And one of the challenges we have faced with getting exact numbers is exactly what you're talking about. The healthcare providers are not able to send that information back to the homeless service providers about whether someone's gotten a vaccine or not, or attended their appointment or not, unless there's a release of information that has been signed by the healthcare provider. So Charter Oak Health Center, as well as some of the other healthcare providers, are on the CAN release of information. So we have, you know, all clients, our 99% of clients sign the CAN release of information and agree to share their information to the other organization, to those healthcare providers, but they can't share it back with us because of HIPAA reasons, unless the clients sign a release specific to release the vaccine information to the homeless service providers. So we also have an additional release that we ask clients to sign that's specific to the healthcare provider, or the healthcare provider has them sign it when they come in to get their appointment so that they can communicate back to the homeless service provider. But it doesn't always work. It doesn't always, we don't always get all of that information back, unfortunately.
Yep.
And I just think, and I offered a suggestion just to proactively engage all clients, whether they've gotten the vaccine or not, but because they're in your database, that maybe you could just do a general outreach, providing information. And also as a reminder for folks to engage in their regular screenings and, you know, annual checkups, as a way for doctors and healthcare providers to be proactive in engaging the communities, particularly those that are most adverse and less confident about the vaccine, and just to start the conversation, you know? And I'm pleasantly surprised that you all have found a way to engage a very at-risk population and being proactive about it. It's really good to hear.
Yep.
You're muted.
Thank you.
Thank you for the suggestion, Angela. It's certainly something we can raise at the CAN leadership meetings. And one of the things that we've more recently been doing has been texting clients who have numbers that phone numbers, that cell phones that can receive texts and have agreed to receive texts. And so that might be an opportunity for us to send a text out to just a blast out to all clients if the CAN agrees to that strategy for sure.
Great. Other questions for Matt? This has been very interesting. Going once? Well, thank you very much, Matt. It's very informative. Good luck in getting from 65 to 100.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Pauline, who's up next?
That would be Tim's going to talk about the EDA grant.
Yep.
And the inform the committee on where we are with that and the different tasks that are on there, hopefully soon.
Yep.
Can everyone see my screen?
Yeah, it's black. It says Tim has started sharing his screen and it's black.
Well, that's not helpful.
That's the entire screen. You're sharing it, but there's nothing in it.
I think my computer is actively crashing. Oh, wait, it's doing something now. Can you see it now?
Now we see it.
Okay. All right. My apologies. Technical difficulties. You'd think a year into this, we would have those all ironed out. But all right. So this is an overview of the EDA CARES Act grant proposal that we put in. So this is for the CROG region. It is a $375,000 grant over 2 years that this proposal is for. DECD is the actual applicant. They are applying on a statewide basis. On behalf of each of six councils of governments, these were the councils of governments that there was a provision in the law for the CARES Act that if you were a designated federal economic development district receiving funding from the EDA, you automatically got $400,000. Three regions in the state qualified for that. So this was on behalf of the six other regions that did not qualify for that. And there were four major tasks that could be undertaken that we applied for. And to give a sort of status on this is that the grant has been sort of initially, we've had the initial approval from the EDA. There was some additional information that they requested before they could give final approval, but all indications point to it being approved very soon. So task one for us was the development of an economic recovery and resilience plan tied to our comprehensive economic development strategy, which we completed in 2019 to address the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. So basically what we plan to do here is hire a consultant to update the SEDS, the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. It'll be focusing on social equity in underserved communities and include actions that respond to COVID-19. The sort of three pillars of our existing SEDS were talents, investment in quality of place, and branding and promoting the region. So we imagine that the strategies that will and actions that will come out of this update will fall on similar lines, but will be oriented towards recovery from the pandemic. Task two is to provide disaster recovery support to the region's recovery steering committee and subcommittees, which are made of representatives of diverse communities and interests. So for this one, we plan to, again, hire a consultant. And that consultant will help with coordinating recovery steering committee meetings, identifying unmet needs and matching resources to those unmet needs, and then serve as a liaison between state, regional, and local efforts. Task three in the grant is to host a series of virtual meetups, educational webinars, and other virtual networking functions. And actually, I guess it could be in-person networking functions now that we're that far into the recovery. They bring together new, existing, primarily minority and women-owned businesses located in designated opportunity zones and other low-income areas. So what CROG plans to do here is, we are not the experts on this, but we plan to coordinate with an existing organization who will help us identify meetup and webinar topics, identify the speakers and panelists for these events, promote the events, and then actually host them. So that's something that we plan to be involved in. And we've had initial discussions with the Metro Hartford Alliance as a potential partner in this. Then task four is to provide no-cost technical assistance, guidance, and digital consulting services to small businesses transitioning to remote operations and sales, with a focus again on social equity and underserved communities. So for this one, we're going to be hiring a consultant to provide technical assistance on things like website development, e-commerce, so online sales, online scheduling, signing up for app-based delivery services such as DoorDash and things like that, and then doing digital marketing and social media. So those are really the four sort of elements of that grant. Again, it's been provisionally sort of approved by EDA. It'd be lasting for 2 years, and we hope to find out within the next month or so whether or not the grant gets final approval. But once that happens, I'm told now by the DECD that the contracting process with us will actually be fairly quick. They've got that all lined up. So I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that. Just got an email about it. But we hope to be able to hit the ground running as soon as possible after receiving the final word. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Questions for Tim? So the two time lags are the final approval and execution of a grant agreement with EDA and DECD at the state, and then execution of agreements between DECD and the six COGs. Is that right? That's sort of the two time pieces that we need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I'm told that all the information that EDA requested has been submitted by DECD. So they're just waiting now. And like I said, I just got an email from DECD saying that they've checked with their contract people, and they have some templates they can use, and they generally get approval from the Attorney General's office within a week or so.
That's good news. That's good news.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah. So that was really good news to hear that. So that's much faster than my experience with the Attorney General's office has been. So that's
that's great.
Very good.
Yep. Questions on this? This is a great funding of some of the continuing efforts in the long-term recovery in the region. And the update of this says many of you on this call would be most welcome to be invited to be involved in updating that SEDS, and we will certainly keep everybody in this call informed of progress as we dig into it more depth.
Yeah, I do have a question.
Sure, please, sir.
On task four, when you spoke about point of sale and getting the small businesses to be more aligned, that's one of the things that we've been working on already at SAMA. And I've been pushing this through DECD and all the other partners. So I'm very interested in talking to you about that.
Sure. Thank you for that, Julio. But the other piece, I think, one of my personal pet interests is developing a digital payment system for the unbanked, which is a broader issue. I don't know if you noticed this, but New York City just banned cash transaction at all subway stations as of this week. Period. Gone. Because they had problems with cash management and so on and so forth. Well, that's a nice way to streamline finances. But what about people who don't have digital access? And I think so, in addition to your comments, and this is which are most welcome, I think we have a whole series of issues where a digital payment system for the unbanked is something that we need to work on, and particularly affects your group as well as many others. But there's an increasing because of the COVID situation, a lot of people didn't like cash because it was a carrier of COVID viruses. So that left people who are unbanked and have no digital payment system, in the lurch. So that's an additional broader issue, but I think one that we really need to address as we continue to move towards a more digital payment system. And again, the MTA in New York City, where you can't get a subway ticket without a digital payment system as of today, basically, unless you go to a machine and try to stuff the dollars in there if they're cooperative.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's the future, and I think we shouldn't be surprised. But as I say, I think whether we look at community banking or other, it may be a problem-solving issue at a broader level, but I think digital payment is going to be a complement to the efforts you're talking about. But if people have digital payment, it's like when we, in the Midwest, we moved to electronic benefit systems for economic assistance a long time ago. And that was a huge boon because it was just a lot less hassle when dealing with checks and money and paper and all that stuff. So we could perhaps build on something like the EBT system or a community banking initiative. But the main thing is to make it where you don't have to pay a lot of money. Today, you can go to a Target store and buy a Visa card, but my understanding is the premium is kind of steep. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to have that system.
I think also to answer your question, Julio, we'll definitely be moving the task force. The Small Business Recovery Committee will be involved in that task force portion.
Great. That's great. Thank you.
And I see, Bill, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you. A couple things on the banking issue. It came up. Julio brought it up in our work group, small business work group meeting. Will CROG be partnering or finding a bank that can partner with these small businesses? Because we found out that they weren't able to get any small business loans due to the lack of bank accounts. So. Is that something that we can look into? And secondly, the other issue is not having, I mean, we can show people how to get on the web, how to do online sales, but if they don't have the right equipment, are we able to secure any funding or find some sources for funding for these small businesses to obtain some equipment to do this online sales and things?
I can answer the first question, at least my opinion, which is I think this is a statewide problem, Bill, that we should run up the food run up the flagpole to a higher level. I think this would be something where the governor and the community bankers and bankers associations could have a conversation about how we deal with digital payment. I think it's that kind of level, because it's a broad issue that affects, you know, what's the percentage of Julio and Hartford, like 20% of the people don't have a bank account. It's a big chunk.
Yes, it is a big chunk. And that's why I think it's so important that we look into that.
Yeah.
Because
I suggest it's not a CROG issue, Bill, that we can do banking on our own. I think we need to move it up to the banking commissioner and the governor's office and that kind of level. So I would encourage us to sort of move that up the food chain. In terms of your second question, I don't know what the answer to that is in terms of particular equipment. I guess the question of how the ARPA funds are going to be spent is still up in the air in terms of, we have a September special session, and I don't know what the city of Hartford is going to do exactly with all their funds and what the state's going to do. But it's part of this whole issue of facilitating small business, I think, is that the digital transformation, not only of payment systems, but of the transaction processing equipment. So those are, but I think they're bigger than CROG. Maybe I don't know if others have opinions on that, but we can certainly try to be helpful and facilitate, but you know, it's a statewide issue.
Go ahead.
No, we have talked about that already for a while. And Sheila, I think, is very into trying to find a way to see how they can help, to find out some type of grants programs that when we identify X amount of merchants that we can train. Because the problem is not only finding the equipment, it's to train them to use it.
Yep.
And to continue using it. But because of COVID, they're not even up to what they were before COVID, never mind increasing sales. So they might not have the funding to be able to do this. So we're trying to find a way to see how we can get grant money to help them through that.
I agree on that. Whatever we can do to facilitate that, and I think grant money for equipment and training is important. But I guess my suggestion, Bill, is to raise this up as a statewide issue, both digital payment and digital transaction support in terms of equipment and training, I think are part of the whole deal of getting our minority-owned small businesses into the 21st century rather than waiting for this. This is an issue that's in front of us, and COVID has just simply sped it up and revealed it. It's not going to go away. I mean, the whole digital payment system issue, as I say, where the New York subways simply don't take cash anymore. I mean, that's where we're headed. I mean, it's just going to happen. I'm saying, Tim, you were going to add something?
Oh, I was just going to say, I know that the ARPA funds are fairly flexible in who they can go to. I was just going to mention that EDA funds generally cannot be used towards private businesses. So I know that we wouldn't be able to use for at least getting equipment and things like that. They can't directly be given to a private business. But I think ARPA does have some more flexibility in that regard.
And again, I'm sort of thinking about the banking commissioner. What's the name? I'm blanking on the name of the Community Reinvestment Act. Is that the name of the act for the banking industry?
Yeah, CRA.
They have a certain set aside they must invest in the communities they're in. And this is, kind of a classic issue. But again, it's statewide. And again, maybe Bill and I can have an offline conversation about trying to tweak a state-level conversation on this. Under the Community Reinvestment Act is one source that, Julio's folks might access, both in terms of digital equipment and training as well as digital payment. I think that's something that they could, it's sort of in the bullseye of what they could do. And there's lots of different ways to do this. I mean, one of the biggest systems in the world is in Africa, where they use cell phone payment systems. It's called M-Pesa. And Vodafone simply makes digital money available through cell phones. And they have, tens of millions of people using it. So it can be done. And there's lots of different ways to do it. I mean, other parts of the world they start out with, Hong Kong did with the Octopus Transit Card, which what happens is you get the Octopus Transit Card, which expands to everybody accepting it for everything. So there's the whole digital payment system can be looked at in a number of different ways, but the Community Reinvestment Act under banking is one avenue, I guess, in addition to foundations, SBA, and others. But I think my main suggestion here is that it's a statewide issue, that it's not just us. I mean, every other region's going to be, particularly all the ones with urban centers, are going to be dealing with digital payment and digital transaction training. So it's not just us. Questions for Tim? I didn't mean to monopolize this, but this is something I'm passionate about, digital payments and digital transactions, because the alternative, which some places have done, is simply ban digital transactions. That's the wrong answer. It's like saying, not everyone has electricity in their home, so we're all gonna be in the dark. Wait a minute here. So we need to do something more proactive. Again, I think the variety of organizations could be involved in this. So if there are no questions for Tim, thank you, Tim, appreciate it. We will stand by to make sure the check doesn't get lost in the mail. very good. Pauline, what do we got?
Sorry, I'm muting myself. Any updates from the working groups, the subcommittees? I saw blanking on names right now.
John Bassett was here.
John was here, and
Brenda was on.
Brenda was on earlier. I don't.
But
see
I think
her now.
I think she dropped off. John, I don't know if you wanted to update.
Sure. So things are kind of like winding down a little bit. A lot of the immediate hit of a lot of different things, like, you know, the food programs, everything's kind of rolling back to more normal. Not as much immediacy. We've rolled back our meetings starting next month to once a month from every other week. And that is, like I said, going to start the third Thursday of every month at 1:00. We'll continue to have our meetings. It's been very useful to have the group get together, even to just, network problems and get to know each other a little bit better. It's a good capacity building. So it's been great. I found it very useful for myself. And I think everyone else consensusly has seen it beneficial. A lot of the food programs are winding down. The shelf-stable food boxes from the Salvation Army are being distributed out through FoodShare. That since the Farmers to Families program ended, they needed something to fill some gaps in some of their large distribution. Those distributions are starting to wind down. The Wrestler Field one ended, and it's temporarily located one day a week in the East Hereford Old Showcase parking lot, I think on Tuesday mornings. And they're using some of those boxes as well as filtering those out through their networks. The CRCs are reporting much less call volume, as you would imagine, with less people testing positive. So the call volumes are like drastically decreasing. And the kind of the concern and, you know, making sure the messaging goes out across the region about what happens when they end their contracts and, you know, make sure there's a just nice fluid handoff to the next round of, local municipalities and stuff who are going to Connecticut Unite, I'm probably botching that name, to handle it going forward. But in general, a lot of the like senior centers are starting to reopen. They're starting to look at their meal plans and how they're going to adapt. Some are looking at hybrid approaches where they're still doing a little more of the takeout versus eat in. Anecdotally, it seems like for a lot of the senior population, the takeout meals, especially the variety, especially for lunches and things, has been very well taken. And so, try to incorporate that, maybe a hybrid model where there's some takeout options as well as not just the hot eaten options. So, a lot of communities are, looking to each other, looking to their health departments, trying to see how they could safely do it. But those centers are opening. Let me just, I know I'm missing something I wanted to say. Not seeing too much in the local region, but I'm with the Red Cross and I know we're still supporting, vaccine, get out the vaccines in like New Haven and Bridgeport. And I know Hereford continues to do that through their health department. And then, you know, just the general concern about rental assistance, what's it going to look like once the, you know, the rent abatement ends. I know there's, you know, there seems to be a decent amount of money in the pot right now and just connecting people to it. But, you know, there's kind of that looming cloud where we're not quite sure what that's going to look like. So that's pretty much all I have to report. Bill, did I skip anything?
No, I think you pretty well covered it.
Okay.
Is future concerns about case management still an issue?
We don't know. I mean, there's been a number of federal dollars coming down through state agencies that have met a lot of immediate needs. And then the question is, what are going to be the long-term needs? And we're just not sure. That's kind of what the gray cloud is. Because, you know, if we start seeing a large rise in evictions, what's that going to do to local agencies and being able to handle that? What monies might still exist to help relocate people or get them caught up in their back rents, et cetera. I don't know if we have total full visibility on that. So that's where case management would really be very useful. Usually when those things happen, those individuals tend to have additional problems and issues that they need help with. And that's where the case manager could really work with them, direct them to the proper resources and walk them through the process. We just don't know how big it's going to get. We do know that a lot of the federal funding through state agencies, especially for, you know, rent help, what is it, up to like $12,000+, has been very beneficial and used. A lot of the local municipalities are reporting that they're using that resource to help their citizens. And then the question is, how many are going to wait until the rate abatement ends before action is taken? We're just not sure what those numbers really are.
Yeah. Questions for John? Clarification? Alrighty, thank you very much. What's next, Pauline?
I can give an update on the Small Business Recovery Committee. We've been meeting monthly. It's been a small group. Still looking for people who might be interested in participating in that. And we're developing a survey to distribute to small businesses just to figure out what are the going to really be the needs that small businesses have in the next 6 to 12 months, or even, you know, in the short to long term time frame, because we know anecdotally what they might need or what we think they need, but we don't have any strong confidence in what they actually do need. So we'll be we're finishing sort of finalizing that survey, then we're going to translate it into Spanish and Polish so that we have that those language distributions, and then we'll be distributing that to as wide of an audience as we can and hopefully get some significant responses.
Good. Questions from Pauline on the small business group?
Yeah, Pauline, camera's down. Yeah, hi. So how do you think you're gonna get all these surveys out to the small businesses? Because we've been trying to figure that out ourselves.
That's a challenge. Well, we were going to request, just send it to anybody and everybody we could think of who might be able to forward it to
We've been using the local chamber, which has been helpful, but not everybody is with them.
It's hard.
We might put some dollars in terms of, you know, a little bit of geolocation, the advertising, possibly. I don't know. We haven't gotten that far yet. but we were planning on sending it to all the chambers, the area chambers, and requesting people to send it or give it out, post it in places.
I was hoping that you came up with this incredible means of contacting everybody, but we'll keep thinking for you too.
Yeah, please give a book. Suggestions, great.
It would be nice if we could get like a list of emails from the Secretary of State's office, but you know, we have no idea of size, you know, even if we get, you know, let's say Harris, there might be some ways that we might be able to do something, but the issue is that contact information is sort of, we'll try.
Pauline offered to go door to door.
Right. We've actually done a little bit of that.
Also good to come from a trusted partner like your local chamber. I mean, not that everybody belongs, but you know, rather than, you know, who the heck is Krug or this long-term recovery committee, if it comes from, you know, Julio Mendoza, then I know who it is. And so.
It's coming from Pauline Yoder, some random person in Hartford might not.
Not so much.
High response.
Yeah. We're thinking of working with the town clerk to have them ask a bit more questions when they do the doing business as. So, you know, make sure we get an email, a phone number, an address, how many employees they have. I don't know if they'll be willing to do it, but we're talking with them about doing that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Good.
At least in the future, it would be helpful.
We were actually hoping the towns would have some lists that they could.
That's our list, but it's very, you know, it just says who they are and where they're at, not much more so.
Yep.
Pauline, this is Jen Gifford from United Way. We might have a list.
Ooh, look at that.
I was just thinking we have, let's talk offline about how we might compare notes and perhaps could assist in some way.
Perfect. Okay. Wonderful.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments, suggestions for Pauline on the small business?
Good.
All right, hearing none, next.
That's it.
Any other items that folks need to share before we call the meeting to an end today? I'm not hearing any. And our next meeting is?
I have to. It's the fourth Sunday in July, which is
not the fourth Sunday. I hope.
I mean, fourth Thursday. I need more coffee.
Fourth Sunday, you're kind of sparse. Yep.
July 22nd. July 22nd.
Okay.
Is the next
meeting? Schedule. Okay.
Next meeting. So.
All right.
Yeah. And I'll send out a sort of a hold the date, hopefully with the correct Zoom on everything in the next week or so.
Very good. Well, if I don't hear any other comments, thank you, everyone. We will see you on July 22nd.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you,
everyone.